How's everybody?
Good.
Good. How are the rest of y'all? Good. I'm doing very well. Thank you very much for asking. For those of you who may not know me, my name is Roy Heller. When I'm not standing here behind this podium, I teach Old Testament down at SMU. And this is a class in which this is, I guess, our starting our fourth year, ending our third year, which we're making our way slowly through the Bible. So we're on Deuteronomy. Starting our fourth year. Just about a book a year. So cool. Let's go ahead and have a word of prayer. I have a little exercise for us, for you to help me with, actually, a little exercise for you to help me with. And then we'll talk a bit about probably the most important chapter in the whole Bible. I didn't say so, Jesus said so. But it was up to me, it'd be something in Leviticus. But Jesus says this is probably the most important chapter in the Bible, so I sort of agree with him. And you better too. Anyway, the Lord be with you. Let us pray. Blessed Lord, who has caused all scriptures to be written for our instruction, teach us so to hear them, to read, mark, learn, and inwardly digest them, so that we may embrace and ever hold fast the blessed hope of everlasting life that you have given to us through our Lord Jesus Christ, to whom with you and the Holy Spirit be all honor and glory, world without end. Amen. A little prayer I pray at the beginning of every class. I prayed it at the beginning of every class here. It's purely Deuteronomy. It's pure Deuteronomy. Except for the Jesus part, but it's pure Deuteronomy. It really is, right? I mean, what are we supposed to do? How are we supposed to read? We're not supposed to read to figure out, you know, what we're supposed to do with oxen and ditches. We're not supposed to read to figure out what we're supposed to do when the little sores appear on our skin. We're not supposed to read to figure out all the little tiny details, right? We're supposed to read in such a way that we hear, read, mark, learn, and inwardly digest. And why do we do all that? Why do we read the Bible? Right? That's a really good question. Because most people don't, right? Especially the people that think it's God's word, like literally. They don't read it. But why do we read the Bible? So that we may embrace and ever hold fast the blessed hope of everlasting life. Somehow, the reading of Scripture is supposed to give us hope. And it seems to me that if, and again, this is kind of, I guess, kind of harsh, probably not though, but if you're reading the Bible and you're not inspired to hope, you're reading it wrong. There's something going on there. You're reading it like a recipe, or you're reading like a telephone book, or you're reading it like a history book, or you're reading it somehow. Because the point of it is to inspire hope. But anyway, and it seems to me that's what Deuteronomy would say as well. But anyway, that's neither here. We got to do an exercise. You've got to help me with something. I've got four little scenes here. And I need you to help me with emotions, because I'm kind of stopped up with my emotions, and I can't feel things because I'm, I don't know, a German. So here's a little scene. All right, it's late at night, and you're driving down the highway. You're not speeding. At least you don't think you are, but you're not really paying attention. But anyway, you're going down the highway, and suddenly, out of nowhere, like the lights appear in the rearview mirror, right? And so it's like, what I always do, is like I kind of slow down and just hope that maybe it's not me. You don't do that. Yeah. But anyway. That's neither here nor there. So you see the lights in the rearview mirror. There's nobody else on the road. He's not passing you, he or she. He's not passing you. So you pull over. They pull over behind you. You roll down your window. Just notice how I did that. I just aged myself. So you roll down your window. and the officer comes up and stands beside the car and looks in the car. What do you feel right there? What is the feeling you feel right there? Give me some.
Fear.
Huh?
Fear.
Fear? Okay. Somebody else.
Anxiety.
Oh, good. Anxiety.
Bewilderment. I wasn't doing it.
Bewilderment? That's a good one.
Cooperativeness.
Sort of a passivity, maybe? Yeah, it's sort of, yeah.
If you don't think you're doing anything wrong, it's wonder.
Wonder? That's a good one. And a type of passivity. Okay, that's good.
One for you, Zulika.
Yeah, so what is that feeling?
Really nervous.
Nervous, yeah.
Really kind of afraid, like you
said. Okay, cool. Awesome, beautiful. Okay, so that's the first scene. Here's another scene. Here's a good one. I was trying to think of this one, and here's a good scene. So you have a kid, teenager, and then they've come home from school, and they are they put their backpack down, and they've gone into the restroom for something, and you knew that there was a note coming home from the teacher about something. Again, they're not in trouble or anything. But you knew that there was a note coming home, and so what you do, you go to the backpack, and you open the backpack, and you look in the backpack trying to find something, and you find a loaded gun. What's your feeling? Huh? Oh, crap. Okay, well, what's that? Give me the name of it. Give me, yeah, that's a response. What's that response?
Shock.
Good. Anything else?
Caution. Surprise.
Caution. Good.
Anger.
Anger? Okay. Anger at the kid. Right, yeah, okay.
Bewilderment would work here.
Say what?
Bewilderment would work here, too.
Bewilderment would, yes.
I feel a little bit of anxiety because you probably shouldn't have done that in the first place.
Yeah, anxiety.
It's a who, what, when, where, and why situation.
So, questioning?
My thing is, yeah.
Disbelief.
Sick to my stomach.
Disbelief. Nausea. That's sort of a physiological thing, but we can do it. Okay, cool. Here's the next one. And again, this isn't really a scene. This is just a sort of an open-ended type of thing. What is the feeling one feels toward one's parents? And hopefully it's in a healthy type of relationship. What is that feeling one feels toward one's parents? Love. Okay, cool. That one's an easy one. Something else?
Respect.
Happiness.
Security.
Trust.
Security, trust.
Obligation.
Admiration.
Obligation, that's a good one.
Advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
Advocacy.
Admiration.
Admiration, that's good.
Sometimes resentment.
Sometimes resentment, yeah.
Sometimes exasperation.
Yeah.
Concern.
Okay, cool, that's good. How about this one? You're taking a trip, and you're going west, and you go to Arizona, and you drive up to the Grand Canyon. Those of you who've been there, you can also work with other types of things, the Tetons, or maybe even at the ocean. But anyway, you get out of the car, and you go to the Grand Canyon, and I've actually done this, right? Where you go, and like, there's no wall. There's the edge of the canyon, right? And you go right up to the edge of the canyon, and your toes are right on the edge. And you look out there, what's the feeling you feel?
Terror.
Terror.
Openness.
Oh. Yeah, wonder.
Mm-hmm. Attentive.
That's good.
Better be.
That's good, yeah. Anything else? One or two more? Huh?
Anxiousness.
Anxious, anxiety. Anything else?
Small.
Huh? Smallness. Good. Okay, cool. That's great. That has absolutely nothing to do with what we're doing today. I'm a better teacher than that. Cool. So let's go ahead and take a look at this. Deuteronomy 6, where we've come so far, right? In Deuteronomy, we're not going to start all the way back at the beginning. In the beginning, God created everything. I'm not going to do the whole Torah for you. We've dealt with Deuteronomy for the past two or three weeks. Deuteronomy is final book in the Torah, and it is presented as a very long speech, a very long sermon, if you will, by Moses, in which he has only one point, only one purpose that he states right there in chapter 1, verse 6, I think it is, and that is what he's doing in this book is explaining the law. He's explaining the law. He's expounding, explaining the law. He's making it, in a sense, he's making it plain. He's laying it out for you. What's the whole point of this whole thing? And last week when we were here, we saw two very important words, if you remember, in Hebrew, Shema and Shamar. Shema is often translated as hear or obey, but in fact it has a whole lot of other connotations that, with that. It has to do with hearing. It's exactly what's happening right now with your ears, right? So you're hearing my voice, but you're also doing, hopefully, maybe, you're doing other types of things, and that is you're concentrating, you're focusing. I see it in most people's eyes, right? You're focusing, you're concentrating, you're trying to perceive, you're trying to understand, you're trying to hear into what I'm saying, trying to get the point of what I'm saying. You're focusing, you're what I would say centering up on what I'm saying. You notice how that's what's going on in your head right now. It's like, okay, I get the point, right? So you're getting the point of something. That's what Shema is about as a whole. So much of the time, whenever it talks about hear or obey the law, it doesn't mean just the law says jump and you do it mindlessly. Whatever Deuteronomy is about, obedience is not mindless. It is, in fact, the exact opposite of mindless. In fact, if you have mindless obedience, that's the exact opposite of what Deuteronomy wants you to do. Not mindless obedience. Perceptive obedience. Understanding obedience. Understanding what you're doing. And in fact, if it doesn't make sense, maybe not doing it. Right? Because again, that might be somewhat dangerous, and it certainly is antithetical to what Deuteronomy is trying to get you to do. What Deuteronomy is trying to get you to do is to center up, to understand, to perceive, to hold on to that. The other word is shamar. And it's often translated, it's translated a couple of different ways. It's to keep this law, and it's also to watch yourselves or to pay attention. And it's a word that has emotional value, and that is to hold on to keep, to treasure something. And I use, the metaphor that I used last week was letters that I and my wife wrote each other before we were married, right? It's something that you want to treasure, it's something you want to hold on to and keep. So, we're going to see those two words. The whole reason why I bring it up, we're going to see those words again today. So, let's see what we got here. Deuteronomy 6. Just notice what I had this title, the one and only commandment. We're really big here in Texas about the Ten Commandments. We love putting those things everywhere, right? In fact, Deuteronomy is going to have the Ten Commandments. And in fact, Ten Commandments are going to appear a little bit later. Or actually, they just appear in Deuteronomy 5. Moses has just stated through the Ten Commandments, and then he starts talking about the first one, and he never gets off the first one, because the first one is actually the most important one. You shall have no other gods except me. He only talks about that one, and in fact, for Deuteronomy, that's the only one you need to worry about, because if you worry about that one, if you pay attention to that one, if you center up on that one, if you understand that one, if you focus on that one, if you concentrate on that one, if you get that one centered up, everything else takes care of itself. And this is what Moses is going to tell us right now. So, he's just done the Ten Commandments, and now he says, now this is the commandment. Well, which one? Adultery? Which one? This is the commandment. That is the statutes and the ordinances. You see what he's just done. He's made a singular thing a plural thing. And in fact, what he's actually done is taken a plural thing and made it a singular thing. This is the commandment. That is the statutes and the ordinances that the Lord your God charged me to teach you to observe, not just tell you, it's teach you to observe in the land that you're about to cross over and to occupy, so that you and your children and your children's children may fear the Lord your God all the days of your life. And just notice that this teaching has a purpose, right? Again, it's kind of like the prayer that we just prayed, right? You don't just read the Bible because God says so. You read it for a purpose, right? To embrace and ever hold fast. So we're doing these things for our purposes. So that you and your children and your children's children may fear the Lord your God all the days of your life. and keep all his decrees and his commandments that I am commanding you, so that your days may be long. So that you can keep. And it's to do there, to do all his decrees and his commandments. So the reason why we're supposed to be reading these things is so that you and your children and your children's children may, what? Fear. Cool. Think of a language. Think of a language in which we, all those feelings, all those emotions that we talked about before, ready? And you got a lot of them, so just buckle your seatbelt. Here we go. Fear, anxiety, bewilderment, wonder, passivity, nervousness, shock, cautiousness, anger, bewilderment, again, anxiety, again, disbelief, a little bit of nausea, love, respect, I can't read my writing here, security, a sense of obligation, a sense of advocacy, a sense of terror, a sense of openness, a sense of wonder, a sense of attentiveness, anxiety again, and I can't read the last one, but whatever it is. So imagine, that's a lot of feelings. That's a lot of different feelings in English. Those are English words, and they mean, they're all in the, what, again, in linguistics, what we would call this, they're all basically in the same, what's called semantic field, right? There's none of this, there's no giddiness associated with this, right? There's no hilarity associated with these words. They're all in the same semantic field. But in English, they're very different types of feelings. What you feel toward a police officer, what you feel toward your parents, what you feel toward the Grand Canyon, what you feel toward a loaded gun, those are very different types of feelings. So far, so good? Imagine a language where you have all of those types, in English, those types of designations of feeling, all under one heading. Fear. There's one word that sort of covers all of those things. So far, so good? Cool. There's not a wide range of words to cover all of those feelings. All of those feelings are simply covered under the word fear. Hold on to that thought. We do the same thing in English with the word love, right? For example, I love chocolate chip cookies. I really do. I'm just bringing this up to you, just in case you want it. No, I love chocolate chip cookies. I really do. And I love my parents, right? And I love my wife. I can tell you those are three very different feelings, right? When I say I love chocolate chip cookies, automatically your brain goes to a place where you're not thinking, oh, you're sexually passionate about chocolate chip cookies, right? Or you treat chocolate chip cookies with a great deal of respect and admiration, right? No, you understand that even though I'm using the word love, there's different things in there, right? But so when I say the word love, you automatically default to the appropriate one in the semantic context. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Cool. Fear. So Hebrew is going to have fear covering a lot of different emotional responses, right? A lot of different emotions, right? But it doesn't mean that whenever we say, or whenever Moses says, so that you and your children and your children's children may fear the Lord your God, that means that all of those feelings that we listed before are all appropriate in this relationship. So far, so good? But it's really kind of tough to know which ones to throw out or which ones to keep. Because I can tell you, I think, according to Deuteronomy, and I think in our own lives, depending on the situation, a lot of these things are appropriate. Awe, right? Maybe some anxiety, certain degree of passivity, very large smallness, that was the word. So just the Grand Canyon, right? A certain sense of smallness, sometimes bewilderment. I mean, I get this all the time. I don't understand what this means, right? Sort of bewilderment, dread, disbelief. Not as in I don't believe, but it's just like, whoa, that's amazing, or something like that. So obligation, all of these types of things. So you see that whenever he says fear, and again, people always go to fear as being afraid. So far, so good? And so what we're supposed to do is be afraid of God. But you see, the range of, well, it either goes into this, Either people think that when we say we fear God, it either means you're afraid of God, or it means you respect God. So you either treat God like a loaded gun, right? Or you treat God like your parents. But in fact, it's a lot bigger than that. There's a certain amount of, I would say anxiety, seriousness, care. That was another, carefulness. There's a lot of these types of things because, of course, in this relationship actually affects. Dude, what I was going to say. This relationship affects everything else. Everything else in your life. This relationship affects everything else. It's not that this relationship should affect everything else. No, this relationship affects everything else. And because of that, it's something you really need to center up on, pay attention to. It's kind of like that loaded gun in the backpack, right? Or the Grand Canyon, having your toes right on the edge of the Grand Canyon. Or the police officer, right? As well as the parents. So, anyway, just be aware that whenever the Bible says to fear the Lord your God, that's a lot bigger than simply being afraid. But it may not exclude that. But it's a lot bigger than that. So far, so good? Cool. All right. Here's one paragraph down. Here we go. Hear, therefore, O Israel. And there again, you can see the little thing that this is Shema. This is to pay attention to. Focus on this. Notice this. Hold on to this. Center up on this. Notice this. Notice this, therefore, O Israel. And observe. Hold treasure. Hold close. Hold in your heart them diligently, so that it may go well with you, and so that you may multiply greatly in a land flowing with milk and honey, this fertile land, as the Lord, the God of your ancestors, has promised you. So here, pay attention. Notice one thing about Deuteronomy is that it loves beating dead horses. If you miss it the first time, don't worry. They're going to say it again. Boom. So here it is. Here, pay attention, right? Focus up. Center up on this, O Israel. The Lord is our God, the Lord alone. Boom. There it is. Nothing else. Yeah, we can go home now. Before church, I was making copies for this class. And I have a copy, and again, I just sort of do this just in case. I usually always have a copy of the Hebrew of the text, whatever the text is that we're dealing with here, so I can maybe look it over or something during the sermon. That's not true. I do listen to the sermon. So I can look it over or something like this. And so I'm holding this, and after I make the copies and everything, I'm going into church, and I talk to one of the ushers, and we're talking back and forth, and I say, could I get one of those? The program. Could I get one of those? And he says, what's that? Well, I said, actually, it's just Hebrew. It's Deuteronomy. And he says, well, just work with that. And I wanted to say, you know what? You actually can. Actually, if you do work with this, nothing else matters, actually. As long as you know the responses in the liturgy. But nothing else. In a very real sense, he was absolutely right. So, hear therefore, Israel, right? The Lord our God, the Lord alone. And you should love the Lord your God with all your heart. We dealt with this a long time ago with Pharaoh back in Exodus. That is, the word heart in Hebrew does not mean, it neither means the pumping thing in your chest, nor does it mean the thing that causes us to love or have emotions. In Hebrew, the heart is what we think with, what we rationalize with, what we consider with, what we focus with, right? What we center up with, what we think with. Right. So again, obviously, if we're going to be doing all of these things with the whole law, then obviously we're going to be doing those things with God as well. And therefore, we love the Lord our God with all of our mind, right? How we think. Everything that we think with all your soul, that is with all of those feelings, as well as with all your might, that is with everything you do. So how do we love God? We love God with everything we think, with everything we feel, with everything we do. That's what we do. And it's all integrated. It's all singular. Love God with all of our mind, with all of our soul, with all of our might, with all everything we think, with everything we feel, with everything we do. These words that I'm commanding you today are going to be in your heart. That is, in your mind. Well, let me ask you a question. How many people took algebra? Yeah, how many people were born knowing algebra? No, of course not, right? So how did you get that stuff in your head so that you know it, right? Well, there's lots of ways. You, oh, I don't know, what's that word? Study, right? Homework, right? You do those things. That's exactly what Deuteronomy is going to say what we're supposed to be doing with Deuteronomy itself. So these words that I'm commanding you today will be in your mind, and this is how you do them. You recite them. You repeat them. You talk about them. You recite them to your children. You talk about them. And when do you do that? When you're at church. Nope. In fact, that's one thing that it doesn't say here. You talk about them when you're at home. You talk about them when you're away. You talk about them when you lie down. You talk about them when you rise up, right? Which is exactly the same way in which you learned algebra, right? It wasn't just something you just did not study. You really did. You didn't just study algebra to learn it. Maybe you didn't, and you've never learned it. But you didn't learn that just by doing whatever it was in the hour that you were in class, right? If that's all you did, it would take you an awfully long time, right? You had to think about this stuff outside of that hour-long thing. Probably at home, when you're away, when you lie down. I know when I learned algebra, I'm not a math person at all. I spent many nights at 2 o'clock in the morning doing quadratic equation. I can't remember now. So anyway, thinking about it when you're lying down, when you're rising up. In fact, bind them like a sign on your hand, so that every time you see your hand, and how many times do you look at your hand during the day? Well, probably quite a few. Every time you see your hand, you think, oh, center up. Focus. Notice. Pay attention. Focus up on relationship, God, love. Focus up. Every time you see your hand, find them like a sign on your hand. Fix them like an emblem on your forehead. Every time you look in a mirror, every time you see yourself, you think, automatically, center up, pay attention, notice. Again, these are signs, right? And write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates, so that every time you go out, you're thinking, oh, center up, pay attention, relationship with God, love God, with everything I think, with everything I feel, with everything I do. When you go in, when you come out, you think about that. So when every time you see these things, it reminds you what the center is, what the focus is, what the point is of all of this. And when I say all of this, I'm not talking about Deuteronomy. I say, the point is of all of this. I mean, of all of this. And I'm not talking about transfiguration. I'm talking about life, existence. What's the point of it? I can tell you what the point of it is. What did you do, Deuteronomy? And I happen to agree. And Jesus does too. What's the point of it all? Focus. Pay attention. Notice the relationship with God. Focus upon that. Pay attention to that. Notice how that affects everything else in your life. Notice how that affects everything you think, everything you feel, everything you do. Notice the close relationship of all of those things with our relationship with God. Because I can tell you, if you focus up, you center up, you focus on that. Relationships with other people take care of themselves. Relationships with things take care of themselves. Everything else takes care of itself as long as we focus on that. Whew. I think I understand why Jesus wanted this to be the most important chapter in the Bible. Because I think it's true. Cool. Now we're going to move off to something else. When the Lord your God has brought you into the land that he swore to your ancestors, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob to give you, and that's going to happen in the next book in Joshua. And what's that land going to be like? Well, it's a land with fine, large cities that you didn't build, houses filled with all sorts of goods that you didn't fill, hewn cisterns that you didn't hew, you didn't carve out, right? Vineyards and olive groves that you didn't plant. When you get all of this stuff, that you purely by grace, you get all of this stuff, not because of your work, you get all of this stuff simply because of the grace of God. When you get all of this stuff, and when you've eaten your fill, when you've eaten your fill, watch out. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again, and I'll probably say it over and over and over, that any time in our lives, when we get a blessing, when we receive something, a gift, when we receive any sort of blessing, any sort of gift, any sort of gracious gift from God, and in fact from other people as well, anytime we receive anything, it's always a test. It's always a test. What are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with that gracious gift? What are you going to do with it? Deuteronomy says is that the tendency we have when we receive those gracious gifts is to forget. And for Deuteronomy, there's only one commandment. Love God, center up on God, focus on God, notice that, notice that. And you understand that Deuteronomy, when I say that, it's not in some sort of Buddhist monastery. It's something that you do during your day. It's something that becomes a part of your life. It's not something that you have a retreat to do this some sort of... No, it's something that you're thinking about, you're focusing on all day long, that relationship. And if for Deuteronomy, there's only one commandment, for Deuteronomy, there's only one sin. And it's forgetting. Just forgetting. Which is really, really scary for me as a professor who's very absent-minded. I forget things all the time. Yesterday, I forgot to copy something. We were going to a party last night, and my wife told the host that, Roy's going to bring you something, and I forget to copy. So this is like really, talk about anxiety-producing, right? Focus up. And when you get those gifts, when you get the fulfillment of the promises God has made to you, watch yourselves. Pay attention that you don't forget the Lord. You start paying attention to the gift instead of the giver. You start paying attention to the stuff instead of the grace. You notice your eyes move away from what you're centered on. Take care that you don't forget the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. Here we go. It's the Lord. It's the Lord your God whom you fear. And again, there's that word fear again, and it's all those types of things. Okay. It's the Lord your God whom you fear. It's the Lord your God whom you serve. And it's by his name alone that you swear. His is the only name that's actually really important. Right? Don't follow other gods, any of the gods of the peoples who are around you. And just notice this, it doesn't say, do not follow another god. This is actually, I think, really important. It doesn't say, do not follow another god. It says, do not follow other gods. And the problem for Deuteronomy, idolatry is going to be a big deal. In fact, I can tell you, idolatry is a big deal, Old Testament, New Testament. It doesn't matter. Because you see what idolatry does. It's not just that what I'm supposed to be doing is focusing on the one, the Lord alone, right? Remember that? The Lord our God, the Lord alone. I'm focusing on that, and focusing on that, and focusing on that, and then what I start doing is that I start focusing on another God. That's not what happens. Because it's not, the choice isn't between one God or another God. The choice is between one God and that, 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 and that. And I start focusing on, I've had days like this. You start focusing on all sorts of things, and you know what happens when you do that? You lose focus. You lose centeredness. You become uncentered. And I see people all the time whose lives are, they're not centered on anything. And Deuteronomy recognizes that. Center. Focus. And again, not in some monastic type of out-of-body, no, just pay attention to the way in which God's grace, God's relationship with you affects everything else in your life. Don't follow boom, 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 other gods. Any of the gods of the peoples who are around you, because the Lord your God, who's present with you, is a jealous God. And we've talked about this before. Jealousy is, in fact, not an inappropriate feeling in committed relationships. In fact, if there is not jealousy in committed relationships, there's something a little wrong. The anger of the Lord your God will be kindled against you, and he would destroy you from the face of the earth. Don't put the Lord your God to the test as you tested it at Massah. No, because in fact, the gift comes this way. The flow is this way. The flow is not that way. The flow is this way. You have to diligently keep the commandments of the Lord your God. Something you actually have to, you have to do this just as much as you did with algebra. I mean, it's something you have to, like, pay. It's not something you just sort of come to church and then you leave and then it's like, you don't think about it until the next. No, it's something you actually have to think about, just like with algebra. You have to diligently keep the commandments of the Lord your God and his decrees and his statutes that he's commanded you. And what are those decrees and statutes that he's commanded you? There's only one. Focus. Do what's right and good in the sight of the Lord, so that it may go well with you. Yet again, beating the dead horse. We don't do these things just because Yet again, we're in a Tibetan monastery that's like, oh, it's what we're... No, we do these things because it actually makes your life better. To be able to focus, it actually makes your life better. And so that you may go in and occupy the good land that the Lord swore to your ancestors to give you, thrusting out all your enemies from before you, as the Lord has promised. Finally, at the end of the chapter, when your children ask you in time to come, what's the meaning of the decrees and the statutes and the ordinances that the Lord our God has commanded you? Then you shall say to your children, well, actually, it's really complicated. Because you see, there's a whole system of holiness and clean and unclean, and sometimes it's temporarily unclean, and sometimes it's permanently unclean, and you sort of have to know where you are in the scale. And in order to move up and down that scale, there's all sorts of sacrifices that are involved. There's sort of blood sacrifices, and there's certain rituals that you have to do with water. And while you're doing all of that type of stuff, there's also things in your whole life that, like if you find an ox in a ditch, there's actually things that you have to do. And in fact, all those other types of blah, 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 it's actually a really complicated thing. Actually, you have to go to Yale and get a PhD in this stuff to actually understand it. Don't you, Natalia? Yes. Cool. No, you have to, it's really, really complicated. No. In fact, when your children come and they ask you what is the meaning of the decrees and the statutes and the ordinances that the Lord our God has commanded you, your response is exactly, it's appropriate for a child. And it's not appropriate for a child just because you're talking down to the child. It's appropriate to a child because actually it's not that hard. It's actually not that hard at all. And here's what you respond. We were Pharaoh's slaves in Egypt. And you understand that nobody, in the context of Deuteronomy itself, nobody that's there that's listening to Moses say this were slaves in Egypt. They all died. Those slaves all died in numbers. This is a completely new generation. None of these people were slaves in Egypt. But you notice their response. We were slaves in Egypt. Those people that are listening to Moses there on the plains of Moab, they have to think of themselves as part of that story, is interwoven into that story of slavery. And I can tell you, brothers and sisters, this morning, 2017, when we have to think about what is the meaning of all of this stuff, and when I say all of this stuff, I'm not just talking about the Ten Commandments, and in fact, I'm not just talking about the center thing, I'm talking about the whole, my back, I'm talking about the whole schmear, right, Old Testament, New Testament, Book of Mormon, the whole thing. You have to pay attention. But the whole thing, what's the point of the whole thing? I can tell you what the point of the whole thing is. We were Pharaoh's slaves. I'm talking about you. I'm talking about you, Anne. What about you, Luke? What about you, Jim? We were Pharaoh's slaves in Egypt. But the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. And the Lord displayed before our eyes great and awesome signs and wonders against Egypt, against Pharaoh and all his household. And he brought us out from there in order to bring us in, to give us the land that he promised on oath to our ancestors. Then the Lord commanded us to observe all these statutes. And what does that mean to fear? There it is again, but to fear the Lord our God. And why do we do that? Why do we focus on that? It's a funny thing. When you're ruffling through your child's backpack, right, and you find that loaded gun, it's amazing how you can focus really well at that moment. You notice that? That might be what's here, right? Focus on the Lord our God for our lasting good, so as to keep us alive, as is now the case. So as to keep us alive. You know this as well as I do. There are people who are walking around, their hearts are beating, synapses are firing in their brain. They're saying words. And they're as dead as coding. You know that. Being alive has nothing to do with what your heart's doing or what your electrical. That's not life. There are people that are walking around that are dead as a doornail. What Deuteronomy is concerned is that you have life. I am come. This is what Jesus says. I have come that they may have life and have it abundantly. He's not talking about walking around with hearts beating. Whatever Deuteronomy is talking about is that you do this not so that you can extend your lifespan. No. So that you can be alive. So as to keep us alive, as is now the case. If we diligently observe this entire commandment before the Lord our God, as he's commanded us, if we do that, then we will be, we'll be righteous. We'll do the right thing. We'll live the right way. You don't need to observe all 617 to live right. No, there's only one. And if you do that, if you do that one thing, then I don't care what decision you make, it'll be the right one. It may not work out well. We may see in afterwards, but I can tell you in the moment, it's the right decision. The righteousness. Woo! Looky there. It's a pretty important chapter, isn't it? It really does sort of center up everything else in the whole, I mean, Genesis, Revelation, it really does. It's no secret, right, that whenever the lawyer comes to Jesus in three of the four Gospels and says, you know, what's the greatest commandment? In other words, what is it that we need to center our lives on, right? Jesus does not say, well, when an oxen falls into a pit, right? He does not say, well, when you get a certain type of sore, right? He doesn't say, you know, well, when you have an emission at night, blah, blah, blah. Right? He doesn't say all of that stuff. What does he say? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength. And in Luke, it's interesting. Jesus says, in the Gospel of Luke, you should love the Lord, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength. And he adds in mind there, just to make sure that you understand that, in fact, heart doesn't mean, ooh, I'm going to cast aspersions for just, it's not that you're standing there in the worship service and your tears are streaming down. Just like we do here at Transfiguration, right? No, it doesn't mean an emotional response. It means mind. It means how you conduct your life, how you do your business, when you go to the store, when you go to the checkout, when you get in the car, all of this stuff, the way in which you live, just an awareness that in fact God is behind and in front of and within everything we do. And if we do that, yeah, everything else will take care of itself. So this is our last class in this class. We'll never meet again. Everything after this is sort of downhill. No, we're still here. But we don't need to. Everything, this is the climax. Everything else is going to be, more of the same. So even when we get to the New Testament, it's going to be, more of the same. So anyway. Cool. Anything else? Swin? Yeah, absolutely.
What is the word
you do? Love?
Love?
Yep, it's the normal word for love. It's not a complicated... Again, and it seems to me that the word for love... it's probably not the chocolate chip cookies. But it is probably almost everything else that we sort of think of as love. It's kind of... The semantic feels very similar. Yeah. Huh? No, it's ahav, to love the, yeah. So again, there's a textbook that I use in class, John Collins, Introduction to the Hebrew Bible. And John Collins wants to argue that, in fact, this does not mean love like we think of as love. What this has to do with, somebody said obligation, in going through our list. I think it's with parents, obligation. And John Collins wants to argue that what love here means simply obligation. That's bull. I don't think so at all. I think that emotional type of thing is, in fact, the very notion, right? He sort of talks about what's the appropriate response to God. Well, fear, we talked about that, right? Love, right? Centering. I mean, he talks about it. And so all of these things have an emotional component. So I think it's bold to sort of make this legal or high-minded. No, I think there is actually an emotional aspect of this. So, yeah. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.